Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And it is going to be the Chip DeBlock show of the day, so hopefully that doesn't disappoint anybody. I assure you that I'm very capable of being able to run the show by myself. We did have Chief Joel Schultz scheduled to be on the show with me today, and he had some technical difficulties at the last minute. So it is going to be me, but I'll tell you what, we got some great topics. I can't wait to talk about some of these. And first, before we get going any further, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. You know, our title sponsor is Gauls at Gauls.com. If you haven't checked out Gauls lately, please do, because we like to say it's the new Gauls. Also, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. Thanks to them, we got on satellite radio on Cinco de Mayo on May the 5th, and we haven't even looked back since. We're having a blast on satellite radio, and because of that, we can do remotes now. So that means when we go to the SHOT Show in January, we're planning on doing remotes from SHOT Show. That'll be a new experience. A shout out to gunlearn.com, another sponsor, bluethegold.com, mymedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're streaming to about 1.5 million people right now. Also, twobells.com. They've built a new online store at leoroundtable.com. Check out that cool gear, like the shirt I'm wearing. You can get some really cool stuff. And we don't make a dime off of that. You know, the prices are rock bottom. And so very inexpensive. We're just trying to get our gear out there. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now let's whet the appetite. What in the world are we talking about today? You know, we've got, it's not a great story, but it was breaking news yesterday, New York City shooting. What to know about our bad guy, the gunman who killed four, including the NYPD cop in Midtown Manhattan that happened yesterday. That was all over the news right after we finished our live show yesterday. Then we got ex-Columbus police officer Adam Coy says a jury got the ruling wrong, and he's going to appeal the decision that put him in jail. He was sentenced, to 15 years to life in prison. We've also got body cam shows a woman being shot by Detroit police during a car repossession altercation. Cops were in the right place at the right time. Then a man armed with a samurai sword is shot by Sacramento police when he moves towards the officers. We got a Madison father charged in a school shooting. He's ordered to stand trial. He's not the shooter. He's the father of the shooter. And the Colorado Springs police released video of a deadly shooting of an armed man in the downtown area. Fort Lauderdale police released body cam of an officer fatally shooting a suspect is armed with an airsoft gun. And then finally, Sheriff Vanderkamp could get $50,000 a year in retirement despite a board vote to revoke a certification. I've got some interesting feelings on that one. And then dash cam captures a driver fleeing a Wisconsin traffic stop. He rams police cars during a high-speed chase. Then the cops finally figure out what they need to do in order to stop this bad guy. So let's go ahead and get started, guys. FoxNews.com, New York City shooting, and what they know about our bad guy. I don't like to give the names of the bad guys in certain situations, but when we get guys that do this kind of stupid, cowardly stuff, I hate to give them any credit at all, but he killed four, including an NYPD cop in Midtown Manhattan. So let's go and talk about this. Lone gunman walks into a Midtown Manhattan office building Monday afternoon, open fire, killing four people, including an NYPD officer, before turning the gun on himself. And we had a police commissioner, Jessica Tisch, talking at a press conference on Monday. She identified the shooter, 27-year-old Las Vegas resident with a history of mental health issues, which should be no shock. The commissioner also said that our bad guy driven across state lines with his vehicle, having been seen as recently as 4:24 in the afternoon on Monday in Columbia, New Jersey, which was not long before the gunfire. Officers found a rifle case with rounds and a loaded revolver, ammunition and magazines, a backpack and medication prescribed to our bad guy. And he's also to believe to have acted alone. Goes on to say that the building that he entered and opened fire in was at 345 Park Avenue. It's a commercial building. Some of the tenants, NFL, Rooted Management, KPMG, and Blackstone. Now, documents obtained by Fox News Digital indicate that our bad guy had a concealed carry permit issued on June 14, 2022. It's valid for 5 years. He also carried a private investigator license. He had a misdemeanor for trespassing. It says trespassing not amounting to burglary in 2023. So it was the, a misdemeanor charge. Burglary almost certainly would be a felony. and the trespass would be kind of like a prerequisite, right, for a burglary charge anyhow. It says earlier records show that he played football at Granada Hills Charter in Granada Hills, California, about 25 miles northwest of Los Angeles is where that's at. He also worked as security guard at a Las Vegas casino. Per Fox News, Paul Morrow, the gunman was armed with a rifle, and he first opened fire in the lobby of the building. And I believe that's where he took out the police officer, if I'm not mistaken. And then he goes to another floor, shoots people there, and then he goes up to the 33rd floor and he shoots himself. And police, it says, are still searching for a motive in Monday's deadly shooting. So, look, that's what we know right now. But look, this thing is so fresh that we're still getting information that's coming down the pike. I heard that he had that he was driving a BMW and left it like in the roadway when he exited the vehicle, you know, with the rifle, and he's just walking. You know, there's video of him just walking down the street, but carrying the rifle down at his side, you know, pointing at the ground, and you know, dressed in he had a sport coat on. And I heard someone on the news yesterday say that he kind of blended in except for the rifle. Well, how do you, I mean, that's just like, you know, I mean, that's not really saying a whole lot. You know, you don't blend in when you're carrying a rifle down the street, especially if you're in New York City where guns are taboo there, right? It's not really a gun friendly town. It's, you know, the more good people with guns, the better. And this is a perfect example of why. I know that New York has their own philosophy. If this would have gone down in a place like Florida where I live, you know, the likelihood of him being able to do all the damage before taking his own life, I don't know that it would have been the same here. There's a lot of people that carry, you know, where I'm at. So, we've got a lot of, you know, some comments here on the stream. I know Betty Dunn's talking about mentally deranged people being cut loose. And that's a good point. You know, when I grew up, I started my law enforcement career in 1983. I was fresh out of college. And we had mental facilities everywhere. And I'm in the Tampa Bay area, but I mean, literally everywhere. So there were a lot of places for people to get help. And sometimes we would refer, sometimes it would be self-referrals, and sometimes we would force them to go against their wishes. But we call that Baker Act here in Florida. If a doctor or a police officer feels that you're going to be a danger to yourself or other people, they can Baker Act you, and they'll put you in there for a 24-hour hold to evaluate you and get you the help you need. But there's not a lot of mental health facilities anymore, or maybe I should rephrase that. The ones that exist today, they still institutionalize people, but they institutionalize them by putting them in prison is what they end up doing. So they don't get the help that they need. So it's really a sad situation, kind of our own doing. Just what a difference between, you know, the 80s and then as time went on in the 90s and then after the, you know, the turn of the century, you know, it just, things just changed. And it's just kind of sad. You know, there's a lot of sick people out there. I believe there's a lot more sick people than what there used to be. And, you know, I'm just kind of watching the comments on the stream here. So, look, our hearts and our prayers, you know, go out to the families of those that are affected, the people that, you know, that were shot and survived or that are fighting for their lives. You know, we feel for all these people, and you know, even the bad guy. You know, look, I don't have any sympathy for him. You know, he killed himself, but there are family members of this bad guy that had some mental health issues, and it's just there's really not a lot of good that comes out of something like this, right? I mean, you try to look for silver linings, but, you know, if a bad guy wants you bad enough, you know, they're going to get you. You walk into a building with a long gun, you've got, from what I understand, a lone officer there, I think at the lobby level, that probably didn't stand much of a chance unless they happen to see him coming to the building. Even with the gun that he had a long gun, our cop, you know, almost certainly had a duty pistol, and it would not have been an equal fight, you know, anyhow. So it's just we're going to get more information as time goes on. I'm just glad the damage wasn't any worse than what it was. And it was substantial, but I'm glad that it wasn't any worse. So remember, hearts and prayers to our people that are adversely affected by this. Guys, let's move on. We've got an update article at 10tv.com. You know, I'm always trying to find good sources of information that are good vetted sources. And this one has ex-Columbus police officer Adam Coy says that a jury got the ruling wrong and will appeal the decision. I gotta agree that I'm a little surprised with this decision. The subtitle says that former Columbus police officer Adam Coy was sentenced to 15 years to life in prison on Monday. So we've talked about this before, but just as a reminder how this went down, a former Columbus Division of police officer was sentenced to 15 years to life in prison. He says the jury got the conviction wrong and that he will appeal the decision. Officer Adam Coy was convicted of murder, reckless homicide, and felonious assault for the shooting death of a guy named Andre Hill. And this happened about 5 years ago. He was sentenced to 15 years to life in prison on Monday. Now, this happened on December the 22nd back in 2020. Officer Coy was called to investigate a disturbance, and he said that the complaint was for an SUV that was turning on and off repeatedly for several hours. And a lot of this goes on inside of a garage. Police say that camera footage showed Hill emerging from the garage, and Hill is going to be our bad guy. And he emerges from the garage of a friend's house, and he's holding up a cell phone in his left hand, but his right hand is not visible. And seconds before Officer Coy fatally shoots him, some stuff goes down. So about 10 minutes pass before officers at the scene come to the aid of Hill, who had been shot at that point, and he's bleeding on the garage floor. He was pronounced dead at the hospital. Now, during the trial, Officer Coy testified that he fired four times after he spotted what he thought was a silver revolver in Hill's hand as he's emerging from the garage. And the officer gave a statement before a sentence, and he said that he highlighted that during his 20 years as a law enforcement officer, he's trained and conditioned to respond to a threat without hesitation. And he said that on the night of the shooting, and it was nighttime, he said he saw what he thought was a silver snub-nosed revolver rising up by the bad guy to meet him, and that he reacted the same way that he was trained to. He said, "I drew and I fired my weapon to stop the threat to protect myself and my partner," adding that he felt that his actions were justified. And it kind of goes on from there. He says, "I disagree with the jury's decision because they did not understand the response a police officer is trained to perform as it relates to the Ohio Revised Code, relative case law, and that they were confused by the jury instructions that they received and deliberated by." So that's some pretty good information. And I'm not privy to all the stuff as far as, you know, what the jury instructions were, but if there were some issues with the jury instructions, he could have a good chance at maybe getting a retrial. So guys, it's time for our first commercial break, and it's going to be a good show. We got a lot of good stuff coming up and some stuff with video components. So stick with us and we'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Gauls at Gauls.com. And yes, they are our title sponsor. And you know, as police officers, we know we can get our gear from a lot of different sources. And then when you throw the possibilities of online ordering, it just gets, wow, it gets kind of overwhelming, right? And the choices are almost endless. But I want to remind everybody that's listening or watching the show to think about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this show. So when you're looking for gear, please think about supporting our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. And I tell you, even as Captain Brett Bartlett says, they pretty much have everything but guns and ammo. I tell you, their deals on boots and on go bags, it is like second to none. Choices are really impressive. So go to Gauls.com to get more information. Again, that's Gauls.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. You know, we left off talking about an update story. And let me just go ahead and remind our users and our listeners and our viewers, ex-Columbus officer Adam Coy says that a jury got the decision wrong and that he will appeal the decision. He was sentenced to 15 years to life for killing a guy named Andre Hill. And we're kind of talking about the shooting. He says he disagrees with the jury's decision because they did not understand the response a police officer is trained to perform as it relates to the Ohio Revised Code. Obviously, if you're in the state of Ohio, they also, the jury, did not understand relative case law and that they were confused by the jury instructions they received and deliberated by. Officer Coy concluded by acknowledging that the case and his actions have affected both his and Hill's family. Goes on to say that it weighs on him heavily that a family lost a loved one. His heart goes out to them. Now, FOP Lodge 9 President Brian Steele released a statement after the Monday sentencing. He called it another painful chapter in the tragedy of Andre Hill's death. And while the incident was a heart-rending mistake, it wasn't murder. So, and I said, was not murder. Sometimes when you do the wasn't, isn't, shouldn't, you know, you kind of lose the effect of, but he's saying it was not murder. And he's got a point. The officer did as he was trained to do. And this is from the Fraternal Order of Police. And he continues to stand with Adam. He says, "We believe the trial court's ruling was deeply flawed and support Adam's decision to appeal, one that matters not just for him, but for every officer who wants to wear a badge and acts in good faith under department training and protocols." I wholeheartedly agree. "As Adam faces a continuing fight against cancer, which I was unaware of, we pray for his strength, resilience, and the justice we believe he deserves." So I'm kind of curious what people think, what you guys think. If the light bulb goes off and if you guys get it or agree, if you're a cop and you're trained to do things a certain way, and let's just say that that gets you in the grease. Let's say that you were trained by your department, by a government entity, because that's what it is, and you follow that training, but then you end up going to court and you got a jury that does not side with you, and they would agree that you did as you were trained, but they don't agree with the training, and then you end up, you know, looking at going to jail for any amount of time, including maybe the rest of your life. How do you feel about that? There's definitely, in covering thousands of these use of forces over the last 10 years, I will tell you that I clearly see some incidents where it's a training flaw, it's a training issue. And sometimes the cops, you know, can go back and get retrained, but you know, you're only as good as your trainers and your training. So what if you're training the guy wrong? What if they train a cop one way? Let's just say that we train cops to pull guns and tasers, and we have them carry them on the opposite side of their body, right? Let's just say you're right-handed, you carry your firearm, your duty issue pistol on your right side, and you carry your taser, your less lethal, on your left side. And we do that so that you don't get them confused, so that you always get used to drawing your lethal on one side and your less lethal on the other side. Sometimes they even carry them at varying heights so that it makes it a little bit more difficult, but that if it doesn't feel the same, you're going to wonder, man, why doesn't it feel like I'm drawing my taser? Because I usually have to go up really high instead of low like I do with my firearm. So there's little tricks to that, but we still know that some people have gotten it wrong, right? When they've drawn the taser instead of the firearm, and that's a training issue, right? But that's, I'm talking about when we train people the correct way, and just that human component, the officer gets it wrong, right? They screw up and they've got to go back for remedial training. But what if the training's flawed? What if the training's bad? What if you just have training? Remember that, Nurse Nobles? If I'm going off my memory here from a long time ago, but remember the nurse that stripped the cops that wanted to do a blood draw and they didn't have a court order to do it, and you had a guy, and I think that he might have been even a former law enforcement that was involved in a serious injury or maybe a fatality crash. He's in the hospital, hooked up the IVs. I think he might have even been unconscious, and they're trying to go do a blood draw without a court order. And Nurse Nobles, I think, stopped them, and they went to put her in jail for that. What if the training, like in a situation like that, what if the training is just bad? Cops are doing what they're trained to do. Should they be held to the same standard? Should they go to jail? Because they were trained properly, or should it be the trainers? Or if the trainers were given instructions wrong by the command staff, should it be the command staff? I mean, there's so many levels of this, so many layers that need to be looked at here. But if someone is being trained the wrong way, I am not in favor of them suffering because of that. Not legally, anyhow. I don't think that this was murder in this case that we've been talking about. So I'd love for you guys to weigh in. Moving along, guys, and we've got, you know, a lot of good topics here, and we got about little over 2 minutes before we go to our next commercial break. We got some story with video components. So like I always say, you know, it's too difficult on a live show to show a live video while I'm doing a live video myself. So what we'll do is we'll describe in great detail what's going on for anything that has a video component that we're covering. And if you really have to see a video that we're talking about, all you have to do is go to our Rumble channel the very next day, because at 12 o'clock, at 9 o'clock in the morning the next day, we do this Tuesday through Saturday. Producer Will will take a copy of our live show from the day before, and he'll embed every video that we talk about. He'll put pictures of the good guys and the bad guys that pop up as we talk about them. It's really a unique way to watch the show. It's not live, but it's not too far off from being live, because it's 9 o'clock the next morning. So you can go to our Rumble channel called Leo Roundtable, or type in, if you go to the Rumble, type in Law Enforcement Talk Show, it'll pop right up. So on this one, this is Butters, the name of the Rumble channel that I got the video from, and that's where we get almost all of our videos. Body cam shows a woman being shot by Detroit police during a car repossession altercation.
Cam from Grayton, and you can see the female subject walking in the street armed with a handgun, approaching the victim. As the officers pass the subject, you can see her raising her handgun toward the tow truck driver. Here in Officer A's body-worn camera, you can see him exit the back seat of the vehicle and observe the subject standing in the street firing shots at the victim. The subject then turns toward officers, and you can see Officer A respond by drawing his department-issued handgun and firing shots toward the subject.
This is a very interesting case, and what makes the story perfect is in Michigan, right? So where else, you know, I can't think of a better place for this to happen than Michigan. So we have our cops on patrol in Michigan, and we're in Detroit. A woman ends up being shot by Detroit police after she allegedly fired shots at a guy who's repossessing a vehicle on Thursday afternoon. So the shooting happened just before 3 o'clock p.m. on Thursday. This is on June the 12th. Officers are on routine patrol, and they're driving down the street, And they're coming up on a tow truck that's in the process of towing a vehicle. Now, he had actually grabbed the car from about a block over, drove, you know how they do it. He hooked it up. It was a temporary hookup, and he pulls off on the side of the road a block away just to get away from the homeowner so that he can, hook it up correctly and then drive it back to the, to the impound lot. But here comes the woman. She's got her gun in her hand. So as the cops are driving by, on the left-hand side, you see the tow truck driver doing his thing. You see a woman walking up with a gun in her hand. And then as the cops drive by her, she raised the gun, pointing at the tow truck driver, the guy that's repossessing the car. Stories are about to get crazy. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys. Thanks for sticking with us. We appreciate it. It's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. They're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or a conducted energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminate weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come around. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up on July the 30th, and that's coming up tomorrow, it is all about abandonment. You can sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue. Again, that is BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. We left off talking about a story. Body cam shows a woman being shot by Detroit police during a car repossession altercation. And it was pretty spectacular just from the point on how the cops just rolled up on it. So cops are on routine patrol, driving down the road, and there is a tow truck driver on the left-hand side. He's facing them. He's facing towards them. They're driving in the opposite direction, but he's got a car hooked up. He grabbed it about a block away. Now he's doing the permanent hookup so he can drive it to the lot. And there is a woman walking up on him that I don't think that he saw her at this point. And the cops are driving towards, they're driving past the truck, coming up on the woman. She's walking with a gun in her hand. And as they go the drive by her, she raises the gun up, but she's not pointing at the cops that are driving by her. She's pointing at the tow truck driver. And so there were three or four cops that were in this police SUV. So they go by her, they pull over, they're bailing out. She starts unloading, starts firing on this tow truck driver. And so then it ends up being that one cop said, and I'm going off of memory instead of reading, the story. But we got one cop out of the four, I believe, that ends up firing. But she turns, when they arrive and they draw down on her, she turns towards them with the gun. And this cop, ends up shooting her. So they were believing that she was trying to stop the repossession of the car when she opened up on the tow truck driver. And I don't think that he was even hit, but she was hit multiple times, ended up getting non-life-threatening injuries. And it was a pretty wild shoot. And it happened, this is just routine patrol, and it just happened to have, all the guys, with them, although only one cop ended up shooting at her. It was a lot going on. They were just in the perfect place at the perfect time. So if you guys haven't seen that video, that might be one worth watching. If you go to our Rumble channel tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the morning, producer Will have it up by then. But it's a pretty wild on-scene, real-time scenario. It's not like a dispatch call. It was something that they just came up on their own. So it was pretty wild. So at least the bad girl didn't die. I remember the police chief weighing in saying that he was glad that no one got seriously injured. I don't so much care about the bad woman because, she's trying to kill a guy that's repossessing a car that is likely, almost certainly deserved to be repossessed. So she wasn't, we have every reason to believe that she was not abiding by her financial obligations. And she was trying to kill a guy that's repossessing a car, a property crime. And so You know, now she's going to live long enough to maybe repeat that offense, which hopefully she'll end up getting some decent jail time out of this. But she did survive, so I'm glad that no one got killed. But there's something we learned from this. So, so guys, let's go ahead and move on to the next one. We've got about 8 minutes before we end up getting to our next commercial break. Let me just say that we are doing a Gulf's gift card giveaway during this live show. So if you haven't won a Gulf's gift card in the last 60 days and you're watching the stream, all you have to do to enter is simply type in the word Gulf's, that's G-A-L-L-S, and give us your email address in order to be able to get that digital card. I'll be able to email that to you after the show. And that's the great thing about having digital cards. I don't have to put them in the mail anymore. So we have MVS is back. And any update on Black Rifle? There is no update on Black Rifle. I reached out to my contact. You know, LinkedIn's a great resource. And I will give you guys a little trick. If you have businesses and you're having trouble making some connections, go to LinkedIn and start reaching out to people that work with the company that you're trying to tag. And that's what I did. And when they start to befriend you, and they don't really call it friends on LinkedIn, but when they start to make professional connections, that kind of opens up the door for you to make these connections. Or if the person that you connected with isn't the guy that can help you out, he can help hook you up with someone that can. So I am in conversations with someone from Black Rifle right now, MBS, trying to get to the person that I need to talk to in order to get them to sponsor the show. So I don't usually get that information out before something's worked out, but I'm doing it today. So that's the skinny on that. So guys, moving along, we've got another story that we're going to be covering. And on this one, it's another story with a video component. So we're still at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have an armed guy with a samurai sword. That's not your usual weapon of choice. It's shot by Sacramento police when he moves towards officers.
Well, we don't want to see that happen.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's good.
For me to say.
I'm sorry.
Fred, I can hear from your voice that you do.
Mimi, mind your mouth. Come on!
So, of course, we're in California. It does go down California style. So I'll tell you guys, you know, how that went down or what that means in a second. Body cam footage released by the Sacramento Police Department on Sunday shows the moments that led to an officer shooting a guy that's wielding a sword. And it happened earlier in the month. So it happened back on July the 14th. Dispatch gets a call about 1:30 in the morning. So it's early in the morning from a guy that said that he has a sword and he's going to kill his friend with it. Now, police said that when they get there, and it's a female officer, they find the guy holding the sword outside his home, and they attempt to convince him to drop it. I know that one thing I pick up immediately is that the female officer, when she's conversing with the guy, she doesn't make statements and doesn't make demands. She asks questions. So, you know, she asks him pointed questions about, can you, do you mind talking to me? Do you mind putting that away? Are you willing to do this? And wasn't given demands or commands. So I'm just pointing that out. We have a guy that's maybe in crisis. He's got a weapon, but he's also threatening to do harm to people too. So she tries to convince him to drop it. He does not. She goes back on radio to dispatch, and now they're going to send someone out with less lethal, and which they do. But there's a number of officers that end up showing back up. And now you got a number of officers basically attempting to do the same thing, talk this guy down. So the officers include crisis negotiators. They try to de-escalate the situation for about 30 minutes. So they spend a little bit of time on it. The man refuses to drop the sword, and then he moves towards the officers. Now, there's a point in time when people have, in situations like this, or they have a weapon, you know, they there's a confidence building period where they try to psych themselves up to do something. And that's what this guy did. So he's going to charge the officers. He knows he's going to charge the officers, and he wants to do it, but he builds himself up to do that. So sure enough, he reaches the point to where he's going to do that. And he does, he moves towards the officers, with a sword in his hand. And that's when it says that one officer shoots him, and they also deploy less lethal munitions as well. It's kind of hard to tell. I think that they most certainly, it seemed to me that there was, in the video, I could tell that they deployed less lethal after they had deployed lethal. But there was so much going on and so many shots being fired. It's possible that they did less lethal and then less lethal afterwards too. And sometimes it's hard to get the timing right, especially the more officers you have. The only thing we really know for sure is the guy's name was Fred, or I shouldn't even say that's for sure. That's what he said. The narrated video that they had, it showed the body-worn camera footage from the officer that responded to the residents as police are trying to get him to drop the sword. And throughout the video, he's expressing that he wants to take his own life. And while an officer was trying to de-escalate the situation, you can hear our guy, let's just call him Fred, say, "Hey, I tried multiple times," and then saying, "Eeny, meeny, miny, moe," before he approaches the officers with the sword, like, which officer am I going to pick to stab with the sword? Now, the video released on Sunday shows multiple angles of Fred being shot from the perspective of different officers, and even from the air, from the from a helicopter. Some of the shots were lethal, others not lethal, as I had already said. He drops to the ground after being shot and is surrounded by officers. He was taken to the hospital, and at least when the article was written, he was still in critical condition. So we have no word on his condition other than that. It was an interesting video. The aerial was actually a pretty good visual of what went down, but not really with the sound. And the body cam provided the sound equivalent, and it was kind of interesting to watch the negotiations. There's a lot more. The standard we joke around as California is being the necessary standard as opposed to the reasonable standard that we have elsewhere in the country. California and Washington State, we talk about them being the necessary standard, where a lot of officers feel that they have to, per statute, exhaust all less lethal means before they go lethal. And we've seen it backfire at times where officers are getting hurt or civilians are getting hurt and killed because they're going through so many steps when you have a situation that most parts in the rest of the country would consider a lethal situation, to where you're going to respond with lethal force and you're not going to run that extra risk of the officer or innocent civilians getting killed. So I know if I had someone here from a California agency or a Washington State agency, they may want to debate that issue, but that is what I've seen from my representation and covering a lot of these deadly use of force incidents, where they just have not used lethal force in a timeline where it would have been done elsewhere in the country a lot sooner. So, and I don't think that there's much debate for that, although I'm sure the people would. But interesting, another interesting scenario, guys. So, and I see Sue Booth, thank you for weighing in and agreeing on the, looks like you logged in on Facebook. So we appreciate it. So guys, that incident is, you can watch that as well at 9 o'clock in the morning, tomorrow morning. And we do that again, Tuesday through Saturday, if you want to watch that portion of the video. So look, moving along, and we have another update story. And, this is kind of interesting because at WSAW.com, Madison father ends up being charged in a school shooting and he's ordered to stand trial and he's not the shooter. So we saw this happen with a previous, husband and wife, that were mom and dad to a shooter. And it's always time for pause when you have these things, because, a parent's really going to be paying attention, but there is a responsibility for a parent. Even if you have the gun under lock and key, as you'll see in this story, that's not necessarily enough. If the kids are given combinations or access to the weapons, even if they're, kept under lock and key. So stick with us. This is going to be a very interesting story. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about gunlearn.com. And as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, forensic organizations, federal agencies, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder is Daniel Kelly, and he's going to deal for you if you have your own agency. If you're a chief or a sheriff, you can actually host a seminar webinar for absolutely no cost. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information, gunlearn.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. And we're talking about a Madison father charged in a school shooting, ordered to stand, was committed by his daughter, and he was bound for trial on Thursday during a preliminary hearing. Now, court official John Rome, and not sure if that was the judge, but ruled that there was enough evidence in the case against Jeffrey Rupnow to move forward with trial. So Rupnow is accused of two counts of providing a dangerous weapon to a person under the age of 18, resulting in the death, and one count of contributing to delinquency of a minor in the December 2024 shooting that was at Abundant Life Christian School. And here's a quote. I'm saying that there's no evidence he allowed her access to the weapons outside of his supervision, unquote. So prosecutors allege that Rupnow allowed his daughter to access the guns despite her history of mental health issues and online activity. So here we go again with the mental health issues and how we're really not helping people out of these situations. But in this case, the father knew that his daughter had a mental health issue. They're saying that he made the firearm available to her. Let's see how this happened. Here's a quote from Dane County District Attorney Ismail Ozane, said that those firearms may have been locked in a gun safe in the home, yet the defendant also gave NR the ability to enter that safe by telling her how she could find the combination. So ding, 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 that would be the first flag, right? The female shooter, he told her how to get the combination of the safe, especially if he knows she's got mental issues. And Rome, the court official, denied the motion to dismiss the charge. And now we've got John Gross, a legal professor for UW-Madison, said that this case challenges the role of parental responsibility in criminal cases. And I suspect that it does. Now, officers arrested the father, Rupnow. He's 42 years old. They did this before 4 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, May the 8th. And an ALCS teacher and a student died after the shooting. 5 students and 1 teacher were injured. The shooter took her own life. 5 people were released from the hospital, and 1 student is still listed in critical condition. Wow. So curious what you guys think. You know, as a parent, you know, you have a lot of responsibility, and you are responsible to a point of what your children do. And let's just take this case here. You have a gun under lock and key. You've got a daughter, you've got a son that doesn't really matter, that's got some kind of mental issues going on. And now I don't think it really matters that they're of age or underage, but it makes it worse that they're underage. And they shouldn't even have access to the weapon without your supervision. But you tell them how they get that access without your supervision, knowing that they've got mental issues. I could see from the outside looking in how there should be some accountability, and maybe rightfully so. And maybe it should rightfully give a pucker factor to the parents that have children in the same situation, mental issues that they can't be trusted, but you're going to let them have access, or tell them how they get access to a weapon without your supervision. You know, it's a new world we live in. There's a lot of liability here, and we have people that are getting killed and injured seriously by the aftermath of what happened. So how do you guys feel? I'm curious about that. And I'm actually, you know, looking at comments here, and I'm getting caught up on the comments. So Betty Dunn, I think, yep, a school guy. These are tricky. Wish I wouldn't have to think about it, but I do. FLG man. So you're right. We shouldn't. And thanks, FLG man, who just made a donation. Protect our students with knowledge and firepower. And you're right. You know, most of the time, you know, you have a kid that's got their head screwed on straight, that doesn't have any issues that's outside of their control. You wouldn't have to worry about these kinds of things, but in this case you do. You got somebody visiting your family. You got a friend. You got your kid that you trust, and you give them the combination to a safe with a gun and a lock and key. And they have a friend over that has mental issues that's staying over the night. And maybe they make that information available to that student that is staying at your house that isn't normally there. Do you bear some responsibility for that? But these are always things that a responsible adult has got to be thinking about. So you know, you're going to be on the hook for a lot of this stuff. So guys, it's important to think about. We've got about 5 minutes, so let me jump into our next one. This one, let's jump to Colorado Springs, where we've got a video component. Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. Colorado Springs police released a video of a deadly shooting of an armed man in the downtown area.
The arguing escalated, and the individual in question was seen going into a vehicle and then carrying a handgun with an extended magazine. Here is security video of the individual in question with that firearm.
TC10 to the Georgia. That guy went back into the white Mercedes and everybody scattered. He's hiding behind the door.
Copy. Just a little bit slow. Two starts coming back towards us. Which way do you have the gun? Third one.
Channel code one for Manship.
Yeah, the orange chat.
That's a gabby yeah, black one.
And gun extended back.
Put your fucking hands up. Hey, put your hands up. Get your hands up now! Get the... Stop running! He's running a gun! Get your hands out of your hand pockets now! Put your fucking hands up. Hey, put your hands up. Get your hands up now! Get the... Stop running! He's running a gun! Get your hands out of your hand pockets now!
So, Colorado Springs, Colorado... Love Colorado. This is where MVS is, one of our biggest supporters on the show, and he's actually on Rumble right now watching. So Colorado Springs Police, they released the body camera and security camera footage of an officer-involved shooting that left a man dead in the downtown area. So this happened on July the 5th. Police say they get a call about a disturbance in the downtown area during a busy time of the night. They get the call around 1:30 in the morning, and that it involves a man that's holding a gun in the area. Now, when police get there, they tried to contact the man, but he reportedly ran away. And as he's running away, he reaches into his waistband. And that's when police officers say that an officer shoots him and eventually kills him. Now, the man was identified as 26-year-old Alex Martinez Saramento. And police initially said that they were able to identify him through the use of real-time crime data center info. Guys, this is so impressive. But they add that they needed help figuring out what happened for the call about the disturbance. So according to police, officers have responded to disturbances with a group of people that night in which our bad guy, Martinez Samarento, appeared to be included. So cops get there, bad guys there, but there's a lot of people there. And they have reports of a guy with a gun, but that's all they knew. So the footage shows the moments the officers tried to make the contact. But so let me go back to this crime center data. So it's called the real-time crime center. So cops are there, and they got people that are reviewing video footage that's purposely set up for a reason like this. And so they're reviewing the footage. And in the review of the footage, you can see a guy that's got a pistol. He's got an extended magazine. And I mean, it's a notable extended magazine. He's in all these people. He's got a girl next to him and he's got this gun. And so when the cops get there, he puts the gun down the front of his pants. So now the crime center reviews the footage. Cops are on the scene. They make sure the cops are aware of this information and give them the description and the location of the bad guy, who they can still see on the video is still, he hasn't taken the gun out of the front of his pants. He's hanging out with this girl by a bunch of cars in a parking lot. So that's when the police make their way over there. And I mean, they're going there with purpose. In fact, they're kind of running over there. So officer runs up on the bad guy and he pulls his gun out. So as he's running up on the bad guy pulls his gun out. He sees the cops coming. I'm almost thinking like maybe he's thinking about ditching the gun. He doesn't know what the cops are going to do. And he turns around and the cops there and he beats feet. Now he's running away from the cop. He's got the gun in his hand, but it's a crowded area. And you know, when the guy does something like that, you don't want to, you know, you don't necessarily have the time on your side. You can't wait till he starts shooting innocent people and he's not dropping the gun and he's not doing what he's told to do. So he's fleeing from the police against their commands. He's not dropping the gun against their commands, and they end up shooting him. It doesn't matter if you shoot him in the back of the head, the middle of the back. That absolutely does not matter. So completely justified shoot. It doesn't always look pretty because it's a use of force. So I say when I start watching the clip, I did it from the five minute and 12 second mark, and that shows him with the pistol and the extended mag when the police are there. And but then when this happens and you got different clips of him running away and grabbing the gun out of his waistband, and it shows the cop that runs up there on him with his gun. The only thing I have is that he's holding his gun sideways, the cop. It's kind of like we've seen too many police movies where they hold the gun sideways. And I don't know why he does that. Instead of holding it, vertical, he's holding it horizontally, which I had a little bit of an issue with. The bad guy ends up dying in this, though. And just for a point. If you hold the gun, the guns are manufactured to be shot a certain way. If you hold a gun horizontally, where the ejection port is facing up, and let's just say you eject that casing up and it comes back down, and what happens if you're firing a gun and it ends up going inside the slide and jamming your gun and you get a stovepipe? So guns are made to fire a certain way. So hold the gun that is made to be fired. And that's how you get jams. And I see John Cox commenting about the prior story about parents and guardians thinking that it won't happen to them, but we still read stories where it happens. So I totally agree. But in this particular case right here, this crime center data stuff where they have cameras up and they do surveillance and then they can review it while the cops are out there and give them the information that they need. Guys, this is impressive stuff. I mean, it's about as impressive as using drone footage now when cops are getting out on calls. You can launch a drone, or the crime center can launch a drone and communicate with that, and they can watch the area around the cop while he's doing his thing. And if they see a threat, they can let the cop know via radio that, hey, you know, at your six, you got a bad guy, you know, creeping up on you with a long gun, you know. So you got to love this stuff. So, hey, guys, it's amazing, even by myself, how fast an hour can go by. But thank you guys so much for being with us. FLG, man, thank you for the donation. Of course, we got MVS who sends me cases of this Black Rifle, you know, energy drink, which I appreciate. And I'm trying to wrap up a sponsorship with Black Rifle Energy, which would be fantastic if and when that happens. But, guys, life intel is not to be underestimated, FLG, man, says on YouTube. So I totally agree. But thanks, guys, so much for watching the show. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Rainey Sutton's 501c that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. You know, I give to them monthly and also to the National Police Association as well. Those are a couple of organizations that are not going to embarrass you. So if you're looking for organizations that support the police to back up, please do that. And don't forget our title sponsor, Gauls.com. Michelle, Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, GunLearn, Blue the Gold, My Medicare, Safeguard Recruiting, and Two Bells. We'll look for you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern, and thanks for the support.